If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/youknowbusiness.
You're listening to the White Sox Talk podcast. It's brought to you, as always, by Wintrust. Chuck Arfine here, and as we sit here right now, there are so many unknowns about the 2020 baseball season. I mean, will there even be one? We don't know for sure, but assuming we do have baseball in 2020, it's going to be a season we have never seen before. Major League Baseball and the Players Association have struck a deal that outlines how the game will proceed as the country battles the coronavirus. And if they get the green light to start up again, what will follow in 2020 will be exciting, amazing, strange, unprecedented, unpredictable, unknowable, and I think unbelievable. So what might the 2020 baseball season look like? And when could it start? We're digging into it on the White Sox Talk podcast right now.
White Sox! White Sox! Go, go, White Sox!
That ball hit deep, way back! Deep to left field!
Holy cow! Carlton Fisk has put the White Sox ahead!
Jimenez leaves the ballpark! You can't put it on the board! Yes!
We got a chance to do something real special.
All right, sit back, relax, and strap it down. It's time for the White Sox Talk podcast.
All right, Vinny Duber and Adam Hoge are with me. And guys, ESPN and USA Today came out with the details about how MLB is planning for a baseball season, and the possibilities are really interesting. I don't want to get into every single thing, but I figured we'd hit all the big topics, the decisions that could be made, and then react to it. But give me an overall sense when you saw these details come out, what you thought, and Vinny, we'll start with you.
I think they're taking this very seriously, which is good. I think everybody in the world of pro sports seems to be taking this very seriously, which is a positive. I think you look at this as, I mean, it is a business, right? It's a gigantic money-making operation, and there are a lot of people who are thinking about the bottom line. But I think there are so many people, too, that know what baseball means to so many people that are sitting at home, you know, right now, social distancing. And I think that they are working really hard to figure out, as soon as they get the go-ahead, the green light, be it from the federal government or just these public health organizations in general, how can they set things up to bring this game back to the fans as quickly as possible?
Yeah, I think that what has to be encouraging for fans, at least, is that pretty much everyone involved here has a lot of incentive to play as many games as possible. So the players' contracts are going to be prorated based on how many games are played. So obviously they're going to want to play as many games as possible. Obviously the owners want to have as many games as possible so they get the fans in the seats and the TV revenues and everything like that. Now, I'm also encouraged that these discussions went so deep because you also have to be safe. You just can't come back early because everybody wants to make money. And I did get the impression, based on everything that went down in these discussions, that, you know, there's a certain criteria that has to be met here. And we're talking about health organizations and the government, that type of criteria, before they're even going to start talking about playing games. So I think there's reasons to be hopeful in that regard. That being said, and I'm sure you guys have to agree at this point, there's no way there's going to be a full season at this point, and we just got to hope that there's as many games as possible.
Yeah, I didn't see the number 162 anywhere in these articles. I think they've already punted on that decision. They just want to, or possibility, they just want to get as many games, like you said, as possible be played. So let's begin with, where will games be played? In a perfect world, all the games will be played in the home parks of every team. But the later this goes, you cannot be having games in October and November, say, in Chicago, per se. Maybe a little bit in October, but certainly not into November. So they're open to playing games in neutral sites or even without fans if it came to that. So what do you guys think about that?
Well, I think, first of all, you know, that would be very ridiculous for some fans to be able to watch their team on TV, but they're playing their home games, you know, thousands of miles away, be it in a spring training complex in Arizona or Florida or a minor league stadium or wherever they think is going to be best for the weather. I think the more critical thing is probably whether they're going to be able to play in front of fans, because we could get to the point where a gathering of 50 people, you know, the two rosters, the two 26-man rosters for the opposing teams would be okay. But 30,000 people is a big jump if you're going to put people in the stands. So I think that it does seem like they're setting it up for the ideal situation to happen where they can play in front of full stadiums of fans. And if you look at some of the things that they kind of did agree to, they want that clearance from those public health organizations to be able to do something like that. But it would be very weird if all of a sudden, all right, baseball's back. If they got the green light from everybody to start playing games again, and it's empty stadiums and it's not home stadiums. It would be very much of a disconnect, I think, for a lot of fans, even though they would be thrilled to see baseball of any kind happening.
Well, hold, let me just say this, that if you gave me baseball right now on television without fans, sign me up.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And I think a lot of
people
would agree with you. Yeah. I think a lot of people would agree with you. Definitely something is better than nothing, right? But it would be weird. You have to admit it would be weird.
Of course.
To watch.
Everything's weird right now.
Yeah. It is weird, but I'm just saying that would be the setup.
Based on some of the things I've caught myself watching right now on television, certainly any kind of baseball game that's live, I would love it. But, you know, and I don't want to stray too much into the medical side of this stuff because obviously we're not experts in that area, but I just find it hard to believe that there's just going to be sort of this periodic, like they're just going to release, oh, now you can have 50 people together. Now you can have 100 people together. Now you can I just feel like it's sort of an all or nothing thing at this point. Like we're either going to get to the point where society can somewhat return normal or it's not. So, and eventually it will. It's just the timing of that. So I just, hopefully we don't have to worry about playing games in front of no fans. Nobody wants to see that. But you know, when you start looking at situations like you're going on in New York right now, I mean, it seems bad in Chicago, but it's way worse in New York. So in that regard, I can kind of see a scenario where, hey, maybe the Yankees and Mets actually do have to play some of their games in other areas where it's a lot safer, where New York might be behind the rest of the country and getting back to normal.
Or it could be the other way around, where because New York is going through this right now, maybe you've got teams and markets that haven't been so critically affected to this point that months down the road are experiencing that same kind of thing.
Here was Tony Clark, executive director of the Players Union. A quote from him, he said, "Players want to play. That's what they do, and being able to get back on the field and being able to play, even if that means their fans are watching at home, is something that we've all expressed a desire and an interest to do and do as soon as possible." So it's going to be interesting to see how this all unfolds.
You know what I honestly think may end up making the most sense, depending on what this looks like in Arizona and Florida specifically, is to kick the season off in the spring training parks, because that's your best way of getting as many games played quickly early on in the season as possible without having to worry about too many fans, because the ballparks are smaller.
Can we trust the people of Florida, by the way?
I don't know.
Can we trust Florida? I don't know.
See, I feel better about Phoenix than I do Florida. But then you got teams like, what are you going to have to, when the White Sox play the Twins, they're going to have to fly to Florida to play that game. So that becomes a whole nother. You're going to have to change the schedule up to make that work.
This is why we do a podcast on this. Because, I mean, this, like those words I use to describe what this season could turn into, use any word in the vocabulary that you have, because we don't know where this is going. The possibilities are endless, because it sounds like the teams, the players are open to just about anything. So you mentioned spring training. So there's going to be spring training 2.0. It sounds like it could only last 2 weeks. That would be it. And Bob Nightingale said rosters would expand from 26. It's funny, we were all talking about, you're in Mercedes. Will he be the 26th man? They're going to go to 29 potentially in the first month of the season.
And that's got to be mostly pitchers, mostly for the starting pitchers' benefit, you would imagine. I mean, I think the one of the minor changes, obviously we're talking about these huge changes to the baseball season this year. One of those minor changes might be starting pitchers the first however many weeks of the season are only going 3-4 innings at a time because they're still trying to work their way into in-season shape, and you're going to see even more use of that bullpen. What happens to that new rule, that new 3-batter minimum rule that we were going to see? Does that just go out the window now because you're going to have to use 4 or 5 pitchers every game? Who knows?
Yeah, and I think that we also have to be careful here to not change the integrity of the game too much. I mean, there's obviously going to be some concessions like that. If you're going to have a 2-week spring training when this all gets back together, there's no way a pitcher's going to be able to come out and throw 7-8 innings the first week of the season. But, you know, I don't want to see more and more pitching changes. We're trying to get away from that anyway. So that is a concern. I just, the one positive here is, guys, I have always wondered, and I've been one of these people that have been a proponent of shortened seasons, because I think right now with just the attention span of the world and millennials or whoever, however we want to put that, I've always wondered if this was more of a sprint than a marathon, would baseball get the attention more as it seems to be losing attention? Would more people be captivated by it? And I'm not necessarily sure I'm right in that argument, but I'm kind of encouraged here and excited that maybe we'll get to see that play out this year and we'll get a better idea what that might look like.
Well, I remember in 1981 when they had the strike shortened season and there was a first half and a second half. And I think that was what it was, right? First half and a second half, if my memory serves. And they used to have this actually in the minor leagues, first halves and the second half. So the season was cut in half. And so every game meant that much more. So if you have like an 80-game or 100-game season, they mean a lot more. Now, Adam, to your point, this is a business. And 162 games means a lot of revenue. If it turns out they have a shortened season going forward, that happened, they're going to double ticket prices, right? The ticket prices will be like the NBA, NHL, because they got to bring the revenue in, right?
Yeah, I mean, certainly, because like if you go to the extreme example with like the NFL, ticket prices are astronomical because there's just not that many games. But, and that's what's so scary about the prospect of, and now we're getting off on a tangent of like a permanent thing here, but I guess I've just always wondered, would you have more eyeballs on the games if it was more of a sprint than a marathon? Would there be more fans in the stands, you know, per game? Because the games matter more, would there be more people watching on TV? Would the ratings be higher because the games matter more? And could that ultimately offset the fact that you're losing, you know, X amount of games that you're cutting out off the season? I don't know. But between probably raising ticket prices a little bit and making it, I just think to me more interesting throughout the year, there could be some solutions there. Now, I'm sure there's other teams that are going, though, you know, that maybe we could fall out of it even faster then. And then what for the teams that aren't that good?
Yeah, well, I looked up 1981. So they did have two halves. And in 81, the White Sox in the first half were 31-22. They had a good first half. Second half, they went 23-30. So they weren't as good. So it just kind of changes your outlook on a season. So another thing that they're looking into is players are willing to schedule more doubleheaders to squeeze in as many games as possible. And they would be 7-inning doubleheaders. And players in the league are fine with the regular season stretching into October and the postseason into November. First off, doubleheaders, 7-inning doubleheaders, what do you think?
I don't like the idea of playing 7-inning games. That being said, if you're going to go to the ballpark for, you know, 12 hours at a time every 7 days there to play a scheduled doubleheader, maybe you want to reduce that a little bit. The thought that comes to my mind when you hear scheduled doubleheaders that frequently is what that's going to look like, because the way that managers handle doubleheaders now is you get a game, you use half your starters pretty much in both games. So you're going to get a lot more bench guys getting starts. You're going to get a lot more pitchers. You might see if starting pitchers are not on that regular schedule of rest, maybe you get a bullpen day, not just every once in a while, but scheduled into the season pretty much once a week. Then that's another argument for expanding those rosters and maybe not just starting the season with 29 guys on every team, but keeping it that way through the end of the year if you're going to be playing a doubleheader every week.
And this is where some of the ideas are going to start conflicting with each other, because if you're going to play doubleheaders, but yet your pitchers early in the season aren't ready to throw a whole lot, you know, how are you almost have to play seven innings then, because there's not enough innings out there. You're going to play 18 innings in a day. Who's going to pitch all those innings? Like, these doubleheaders are going to have to be played later in the year then to make it actually happen. And I think just the fact that the players are willing to play doubleheaders, that's important, because players hate doubleheaders. I will never forget a conversation I had with Yonder Alonso last year where he told me that it sometimes takes 2 or 3 days after a doubleheader to feel normal if you actually play in both of those games.
You know what I would do? When a pitcher or a game is to be official is, what, 5.5 innings? Okay. How about 5-inning doubleheaders? That way, you're probably only going to play 10 innings that day, which is not going to tax your whole team and tax your whole bullpen. And it really is, let's go. First inning, let's go. 5-inning games, that's it.
But you know what? Not then. You can't sell 2 sets of tickets to 5-inning games.
Fine.
You could probably do a split ticket doubleheader if you keep it at 7, and that's twice the revenue there, Chuck. Come on.
Well, I know, right. I see both sides, but we're talking about the shortened attention spans. A 5-inning game, we better put some runs on the board now.
You think batters are selective in a 9-inning game?
Yeah, right,
oh my God, 5-inning games would end up being 4 hours long.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used, because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
All right, so players in the league fine with the regular season stretching into October and the postseason into November. Say there's a postseason in November, all right? We're playing at Miller Park, right? Like, if the White Sox or Cubs make the playoffs, what would you guys think about them playing their games at Miller Park?
Well, and this was my number one question with that, is with these, if the playoffs go late into the year and you can't play outside in the Midwest on the East Coast, do they wait? I mean, what if the World Series is the Dodgers and the Astros? They don't need to do anything, right? Those two teams can play at their home parks, and that they can have a quote-unquote normal World Series. But if it's the White Sox are in the World Series, do they have to go to Miller Park, or do they pick a completely neutral site? You know what I mean? Say, okay, we're playing all these games at Dodger Stadium. We're playing all these games down in Miami, where they can kind of turn it into an event, a Super Bowl kind of thing almost. I think that might be a way that baseball would want to go, but do they just completely hold off on the decision and say, well, we can have the Dodgers and the Astros in the World Series and they can just play it as normal?
Yeah, I think any of us who have been at World Series games, we just have to hate the idea of a true neutral site. Now, look, it's sports. Fans are probably going to travel even through some of these hard times. I think cash is going to be hard to come by for fans, but you know, it might turn into like a bowl game situation where, hey, the fans still show up, you know, thousands of miles away. I don't know. I like the idea more of having a contingency plan. So if we're really talking about a World Series late into November, maybe even December, then localized solutions. So you don't have to drive too far. Miller Park for either the White Sox or the Cubs would make a ton of sense because it's covered, it's close. From where I live in traffic, I could get to Milwaukee faster. I get to downtown Chicago, and I'm not the only one who has that situation. So as long as it's a place where the fans can get to and it still be mostly a home game for the White Sox, for example, then I like that idea, and I think it's a good solution.
Where do the Yankees go, though? Where do the Red Sox go? You know what I mean? Like, there are areas
Toronto,
of the country.
But that's
Toronto.
Not that close.
Yeah. That's where they go. That's pretty far away. Yeah, exactly. You need a passport to go to your team's home game. But I mean, you know, I think Chicago fans are lucky because they have like an easy solution that's right up the road. I'm not sure how many markets have that easy solution.
Most of the Yankees fans live in Florida anyway.
True enough. There you go. Exactly. So there you go. That's an argument for the Miami right there.
All right. There's also, they're talking about expanded playoffs, possibly with a new unique format.
Yeah, Chuck, I don't think we ever talked about this on the podcast when the news of this broke. I think last month, right? Early February, I think, is when it broke, when this was reported. But this is a wild change. It's teams getting to pick their opponents pretty much. And I mean, it would be very unique. And I think baseball, if you can call something a silver lining to this kind of crazy situation that we're experiencing right now from the league's perspective, it's an opportunity to test this. It's probably much easier to collectively bargain this for 1 year in a test scenario where it might, if it doesn't work, you can abandon it, than it would be in the next round of CBA negotiations to say this is how it's going to be from now on.
Yeah, I originally wasn't a huge fan of specifically the pick your opponent type situations. I actually think it kind of creates a disadvantage for the team that has to pick, because it almost kind of creates a they wanted us, they're coming for us, you know, more motivation for the other team. But it, to your point, Vinny, we're never going to see a year. Hopefully, we never see a year like this again, and a season like this again. And so, if both sides are willing to talk and have an open mind towards things because of the situation, then hey, let's experiment with some of this stuff, because there's no way that what we're about to witness in 2020 in Major League Baseball is going to be anything close to normal. So let's have as much fun with it as possible.
Now that comes the question of when. When could the season start? The best case scenario as we sit here right now, and this is coming from the discussions that were done between the players' union and the league, is it seems to be that players would head to camp. Best case scenario, they head to training camp or spring training in mid-May, and the regular season starts in mid-June or somewhere around there, maybe early June. And if they do, then they think a 130-game schedule is not out of the realm of possibility. But they also said in this report, and I got this out of Jeff Passan's article in ESPN, that they also think that playing 80 to 100 games would be a huge win at this point.
Yeah, I mean, the dates that you just laid out there, that late May restart and kind of opening day come early June, I think that's a hope, and that's nothing more than a hope right now. And, you know, I think us three all hope that the situation nationwide would improve enough to let that happen. But it might also be wishful thinking. I mean, it might be kind of a situation where any number of games, like you illustrated there, between 80 and 100 is a big win. How little number of games is any kind of win? You know what I mean? I guess a good question would be to you guys, how short of a season would you as a baseball fan be willing to accept from a compete for a championship standpoint? Obviously, we just want to see a baseball game right now. But, you know, if you're talking about your team going out there and competing for a championship, how few games would make that a worthwhile enterprise, do you think?
Yeah, for me, I think I'd have to at least see 81 and just at least half the season. And even I'm uncomfortable with that, because I just, you know, the one thing that's so good about baseball season being a marathon is that usually the cream rises to the top. And, you know, I just think you're going to be in a danger scenario where almost the wrong teams go to the playoffs, if that makes sense. But you'll never really know. So I'd like, personally, I'd love to see 120 games at least, always selfishly, because I've always been curious what that would look like, 120 game season. But at a minimum, I need 81. And if it's anything shorter than that, I just feel like baseball has to figure out a way to play 81 somehow. And what are we talking? 81 games. Can you get that accomplished if you start in July, August?
Well, I think if you're going to mid-October, you can, and you're scheduling double headers, you can probably squeeze almost 80 games in if you started in August, I would imagine, right?
And there's also got to be a concern of how late this thing goes to the point where it starts impacting 2021. I guess now the good thing is you wouldn't have as many innings and games under your belt, but we're talking, all of a sudden we're talking about an offseason of like 2 months.
Yeah, the number that looks good or right to me is around 80, 81. Listen, NHL and NBA, that's their season. They play 81 games. Isn't that the number? 82 games in their seasons. And NBA and NHL fans aren't like, oh, I need more. That's enough for them. And this is a special circumstance. In 1981, they played anywhere from 105, 109 games, something like that. And that's just, it was what it was, and it wasn't that big of a deal. But, you know, the best case scenario would be, yeah, earlier mid-June. In my head, I'm like, I keep saying to myself, just give me baseball July 1st. If I can get baseball started July 1st, I'll feel like, okay, we got a shot here to get some baseball in. And I think I can wait till July. That's just how I feel. I don't want to wait till July, but that just gives some wiggle room in case things don't improve like we're hoping that it will. But then there's this. What happens if a player or an umpire tests positive for the virus during the season? Then what? This is where things get complicated, because because in Japan they postponed their season. They're supposed to start March 20th, and now they're going to resume April 24th. And one of the best pitchers in the league tested positive for the virus last week, along with two of his teammates. The rest of the team is in quarantine right now, but they still plan on opening the season in a few weeks. But like, that's part of the unknown. You can't play a league. The league can't be like, well, because there's this chance that someone might get the virus, we're not even going to try. No, they're going to try and hope for the best, but this is this thing that's going to be out there. What if someone tests positive?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can't. That's the danger of coming back too early, right? I mean, and that's kind of why you really have to listen, baseball does, to these public health organizations and to the government. I mean, and to the governments, I should say, because the state governments are kind of all handling this in their own ways too. And that obviously is going to affect tons of different teams in different ways. You really need everybody to be in concert on giving the green light that this is okay to go ahead. And that's why, personally, I'm being more cautious about what that start date might be. I'm thinking that, yeah, maybe it will be July or August before this gets going, just because you want to make sure that you minimize the chance that something like that happens. Because there's, in my opinion, or in my first thought, I should say, would be, if someone did test positive, you should stop everything, right? I mean, that's what we've, as a society, have done here in an attempt to keep this from spreading, is kind of shut everything down. And if you're going to be in the position where you're letting this go, but then all of a sudden it's back or it's popping up, you should probably take as much caution to make sure that your players aren't being put into more danger.
Hopefully there's some type of solution to that problem, because I hate to say it, but I just feel like something like that happening is inevitable. There's been so much conversation from medical experts talking about how there probably will be some type of second, third wave to this whole thing. And it's kind of a conversation nobody really wants to have, right? But look at what happened when Rudy Gobert tested positive. I mean, that was it for sports. I mean, it was the NBA shut down, and then college basketball, and then 2 days later, everything was shut down. And part of that, I think, was because of the unknown and taking an abundance of caution. So maybe when we get to the point where sports comes back, there's some type of plan in place for that to happen. Because if you just go, like, I've been reading some stories back from 2005 as we go through our soccer rewind right now that we've been doing. And there was an early flu bug that hit the White Sox that year. You know, there were a couple of guys out in early April. And flu bugs happen all the time in sports. They go through locker rooms, and there's really, those guys are in tight quarters every single day. It's hard to get a hold of. And this is so much worse than the flu, and yet probably more contagious. So that part of this conversation is very serious, and I'm sure something that all these sports leagues are talking about right now.
All right, there's also the MLB draft, which has been moved from June 10th to as late as July 20th, with a signing date as late as August 1st, and the rounds have been reduced from 40 to possibly as little as 5. What's your takeaway from that?
First of all, applaud Major League Baseball for even moving it back, unlike the NFL that is like kind of stubbornly forcing their draft to happen, even though teams can't do medicals, teams can't really look at these players. I know it's a little bit different in Major League Baseball, but it's also not, because these scouts need to get out and look at these guys. And so I think it's only fair to the sport to not have teams completely guessing on prospects even more than they already are guessing when it comes to draft prospects. So I at least applaud Major League Baseball for pushing it back. But yeah, this idea of less rounds, that's actually hard to even wrap your brain around.
Well, I don't think it was obviously done with this intention, but this really does line up with the reported plan by Major League Baseball to try and reduce the number of minor league teams very significantly. Obviously, that would mean a pretty large reduction in the number of jobs for those minor league players, and that would require a large number of prospects to be removed from the equation in the draft. So I think this kind of lines up with this, obviously not for the reason that anybody was hoping for. But to me, the draft is very long. To see it reduced would make it, I think, more like the NFL and the NBA drafts, where you've got fans who kind of know the guys who are going to be selected. I think it's obviously not good from the standpoint of if you're a high school senior right now, or if you're a college junior right now, or especially if you're a college senior right now that was hoping to get a job playing minor league baseball going forward, because that the chances of you doing that just got decreased by an awful lot. I think it's better to have a draft than to not have a draft, which was a discussion that was going on before this deal was made. So a lot of effects on the draft, obviously. I think for White Sox fans specifically, they are hoping that they are going to play, pay fewer attention to the minor league system and stuff like that as the major league team gets better. But for sure, this is going to be a big time effect on the minor leagues.
And one last thing, and that is the minor league season. How do they play a minor league season? What's that going to look like? Jeff Passan said, major league teams clearly need a grouping of AAA and AA players to be ready in case of injuries. But that's also baseball in 60 cities or towns with their own questions about health and safety and the ability to operate with no fans. So two player development directors talked about playing backfield and intra-squad games among the lower-level minor leaguers, perhaps games at spring training sites between AA and AAA teams. That could be your minor league season. It's crazy.
Yeah, and then that would be unfortunate for, you know, all those small towns that, you know, depend on these teams, all the people that work with those teams. But, you know, you do need to get the development in, and you got to play the games. And, you know, that's the – not to go back to the draft, but that's the other interesting point about that is, like, there's not even high school seasons happening right now. There's not even college seasons happening right now. So what are you evaluating even before the draft? And how do those players keep developing? I mean, that's a huge part of this at the minor league level, at the college level, at the high school level. Is you got to have baseball to continue to get better. And so if it comes down to playing games on the backfields, I guess you got to do it.
Well, here's my question. If it's okay to play baseball in major league stadiums, why would it not be okay to play in minor league stadiums? I mean, if they're really going to go by the recommendations from government and public health organizations, then shouldn't that apply to all of those things? I mean, if you're going to play without fans at Major League Baseball, why can't you play without fans at minor league baseball? It seems like those two things should go in concert, not because of the baseball element of it, but because of the health element of it and because of what people would be allowed to do.
Now, that's a good point. I think it's more of like, how much can we realistically control? Yeah. I don't know. That's a great point to make. But listen, there was a phrase or a slogan or a saying, I should say, that I remember hearing when things were seemingly normal in my life, when it was said, shall you live in interesting times? We are living in interesting times. We have entered very interesting times, certainly in sports. We do not know where this is going. We can hope and pray that they can control this virus and we can live a normal life again. But whatever happens, this will not be a normal baseball season. There's no way it's going to be. And, you know, I'm hopeful and optimistic that we can enjoy this game that we love so much, and it will be exciting and new. Exciting and new. And that would be, that's my hope.
Yeah, I think right now, guys, we just kind of got to take it day by day. And that's really all we can do. It sounds cliche, but that's because there's just so many unknowns, as we just summed up here for the last 30 minutes or so. No one really knows where this is going. But it's also fun to talk about. You know, it's fun to talk about baseball and have some hope out there for everybody. And hopefully the people listening to this podcast too feel the same way.
Day by day. Very, very baseball of you, Adam. Very. That's we're going to get. I can't wait to get back and get that answer from managers and players as the season moves along here.
It's bad when the reporters are using it already.
I know. We're using the cliches to explain to all of you where things are at right now. It is a day-by-day situation for all of us. Well, hey, guys, thanks. This was a fun discussion, interesting discussion for sure. And I'm looking forward to the day when we're in a brighter place on the planet and we can look back at this podcast and go, boy, remember what those guys were thinking and dealing with at that point? I'm so glad to be out of that. And there will come a day. I look forward to that time. Actually, I think what we might do in 2 years, we'll replay this podcast and say, remember when?
Hey, maybe some of these ideas will solve a lot of problems right here. Maybe there we just did it and we don't even know it.
That's true. That's going to be a wrap for this edition of the White Sox Talk podcast, brought to you by Wintrust, your home for White Sox checking with free ATMs nationwide. Go to your special White Sox webpage, www.wintrust.com/sox. My thanks to Vinny Duber and Adam Hogue. Hawk Harrelson, take it away.
Thanks, Archuk. And this edition of the White Sox Talk podcast is over.